Welcome to the Solo 2.0 podcast, where two sisters, Jess and Rye, focused on health and hormone balance to help you step into that 2.0 version of you.
Growing up, we heard all about hormones.
Sometimes more than we wanted.
From our mom, who is a hormone health educator.
As we got older, we rebelled and experienced our own health struggles and ups and downs. But today we have businesses helping people get in tune with their bodies, break free from restrictive eating and lifestyle habits, and learn how to balance their hormones naturally. So what can you expect from this podcast?
Honest conversations and hot topics that should be more mainstream, like period health, cycle tracking, non-hormonal birth control, and our unique take on fad diets and trends that aren't always so supportive for women. Plus, interviews with health and wellness entrepreneurs making a big impact in the world.
Ladies, it's time we align with our powers and redefine what healthy means to us.
Let's get into it.
Welcome back to the Solo 2.0 podcast. This is Jess, holistic health coach and founder of Body Bliss by Jess. And my amazing co-host is my sister, my partner in crime, Rye Birch, co-founder of our family business, Your Hormone Balance. Today in the intro, you just have me, but Rye will be joining me to interview our guest. And today we are continuing the conversation around blood sugar balance with registered dietitian nutritionist, Jillian Cicerini. We thought this would be a really great follow-up to the recent interview that I actually did solo with Austin McGuffey, who is also known as the Metabolism Mentor. So I'd definitely recommend going back and listening to that episode to really round out your understanding of the importance of blood sugar balance when it comes to your health and hormones and how it, you know, impacts everything from your weight, mood, energy, sleep, disease prevention, productivity, and more. So I'm going to link that episode in the show notes so you can easily find it. But to get right into the juice, the reason I wanted to have this follow-up interview is because in the conversation I just referenced with Austin, we actually talk about why we both decided to wear a continuous glucose monitor known as a CGM on our arms for a month to monitor our glucose levels 24/7, even though neither of us are diabetic. The CGM device that I wore is by NutriSense, which is a health company that utilizes continuous glucose monitors to help its members improve all aspects of their health. So I thought it would be really interesting to have a dietitian come on who actually works for NutriSense. And that's how we connected with our guest, Jillian, who is a wealth of knowledge, and she really knows how to make this topic approachable and realistic, which I obviously appreciate a lot. She is a University of Delaware graduate who specializes in glucose control, metabolism, healthy cooking, and weight loss. So in this episode, we really get into the nitty-gritty around what it means to balance blood sugar, signs of low or high blood sugar, how to monitor glucose levels via a continuous glucose monitor or CGM, what optimal glucose levels look like pre and post meals and when fasted, and how different factors like obviously food, exercise, stress, sleep, all impact your blood glucose levels and how the levels can vary depending upon the person and their different lifestyle factors day to day. Even for, especially for women, looking at how your menstrual cycle can impact your glucose levels throughout the month. We also get into the importance of mindfully pairing macronutrients, which are proteins, fats, and carbs, to improve a glucose response versus feeling like you have to cut out an entire food group. And then also how to host experiments into your own body to see what factors, you know, impact your unique levels. We also touch on realistic steps that anyone can take to improve insulin sensitivity pre and post heavier meals, or maybe, you know, you might call them treat meals, and also while traveling to be able to enjoy a balanced life without restriction, which is what we are all about. So if after you listen to the episode, you're interested in checking out NutriSense and their membership options, you can go to NutriSense.io, which is linked in the show notes, and use code JESS30 for $30 off your CGM, which comes with a free dietitian for the first 2 weeks, and also their app where all of your information and all of the data is uploaded. You can also keep track of your meals, and there's a bunch of really cool features and education. So I share a lot more about that in the episode and sort of some of the takeaways from my experience using NutriSense and also working with one of their dietitians for 2 weeks. Actually, I believe I worked with her for a month. So yeah, I had a lot of opportunity to kind of gather data and work on some things that I personally have been dealing with. So we hope that you will all find this episode helpful and empowering. And if you enjoy what you hear, please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast and share a screenshot of the episode tagging us at Solo 2.0 Podcast and Body Bliss by Jess. And we would just love that. We want to hang out with you over on Instagram. So if you don't already follow us, that's where you can find us. You can also find our family business, Your Hormone Balance, on Instagram. And really our goal is to provide education in an entertaining way that's realistic, that's digestible, and that you can implement in your lives in a way that works for you. So anyway, enjoy this episode and we will meet you on the flip side.
Hello.
Hi, Jillian. It's Jess and Rye with Solo 2.0. How's it going?
It's good. How are you guys?
Good.
We're doing great. We can't wait to dive into this topic and so excited about all your expertise when it comes to blood sugar control and sustainable weight loss and what the heck is a CGM. This is such a great follow-up to a conversation that we just had with our guest Austin, who goes by the Metabolism Mentor. He gave a lot of great tips around how to manage your blood sugar and just do it in a realistic way. And so we want to get into more of the nitty gritty, but we'd love to start by having you kind of share a little bit about your backstory, how you got into this line of work as a dietitian and a nutritionist, and obviously you're passionate about it. So we want to hear what that was like for you.
Yes, of course. So starting way back as a child, I was always very interested in health and fitness. I think this just came from the fact that my dad was really into health and fitness. He was a physical therapist. I was an athlete my whole life. I was also very interested in cooking and food from an early age. So it naturally made sense for me to go into the dietetics profession. So I graduated from the University of Delaware in dietetics and also did my internship there. And for my first job out of college, I actually worked in a very different environment than I do now. I worked in community health. I worked at a healthcare system in the South Jersey area. And the program that we did was the mission of it was to improve food access in low socioeconomic communities. So we'd go out in a van into these like poor communities and sell discounted produce. And my job there as a dietitian was to help inspire the people that we were serving to, you know, change their lifestyle, be interested in health and nutrition, interested in incorporating more fruits and vegetables into their diet. And it was a really great experience. I really loved the work that we did. But towards the end of those 3 years there, I was looking for more one-on-one coaching experience. I also became increasingly interested in the concept of metabolic health. And I started to see how, you know, all of the biggest health problems of today are all kind of related to metabolic health, whether that be obesity, diabetes, Alzheimer's. These are all issues of problems of the metabolism. And so, you know, towards the end of my 3 years of working there, I started doing a little bit more investigation myself into what other job opportunities there were for nutritionists. And I came across NutriSense and I immediately knew that that was an environment I wanted to work in, because not only was I going to be getting that one-on-one coaching experience that I was looking for, but the mission of the company is to focus specifically on metabolic health, reducing the risk of these metabolic issues from developing into diabetes, obesity, heart disease. And I applied, got in. I've been there since January of last year and I've never looked back.
Wow. It's amazing how you knew from such a young age exactly what you wanted to do. And you've had such a clear path forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think I definitely had some moments of thinking about doing other career choices, but like it just ended up making sense for me once I hit college that
these are where all my interests lie. Like, this is what's for me.
Yeah. Well, and really quick, I feel like there's some confusion for people around the difference between a dietitian and a nutritionist. You're both. So yes. I think that's interesting because there is a difference. So can you explain what that is for people?
Yeah. So to be a registered dietitian, you need to go through a certain amount of education and training. So you need to get your undergraduate degree in dietetics and then complete a dietetic internship, an accredited dietetic internship. Actually, I think now you need your master's as well as your undergrad, but I got in before that transition happened. So, yeah. And with a dietitian, there's not anyone can call themselves a dietitian. That's not like, it's a term you could use, anyone could use, but registered dietitian means that you went through that specific training.
Oh, mm-hmm. Okay. That's interesting. Okay. Yeah. Also with your experience working with communities in, you know, lower socioeconomic neighborhoods, I find that work to be really fascinating because I think there is so much today around, especially within the wellness world that, I mean, we're very immersed in it, that live, especially living in Los Angeles, where there's all of these enhancements that you can do to, you know, improve your metabolic health. And there's all these, you know, supplements and superfood powders and places that you can go to, you know, get like crazy different types of massages and biohack your body. And it's becoming this sort of affluent world in a lot of ways. And when it comes down to it, anybody in this world, no matter how much money you have, you know, if you can afford to get just even the basics, you have access to balancing your blood sugar. And it's very simple. And it doesn't have to be that you are spending a ton of money at a Whole Foods grocery store or adding on all of these things. And so I'm curious how, you know, what you would say to that with like just educating people on the basics and taking away sort of the fear and the idea that it's maybe only for the privileged.
Yeah. So great question. So I think like you said, it really doesn't have to be as complicated as we make it out to be, especially the more niche we are in the dietitian world, sometimes we lose touch of like, what are the basics? And I think just like trying to, the biggest low hanging fruit I like to teach people when they're learning the basics is let's try to center your meals around protein, because protein is going to be the most satiating macronutrient that you can target, and it's going to be good for your blood glucose. And that little tidbit usually goes a long way with people, because I've noticed that the people who are the most far removed from the basic nutrition information are usually just consuming a very high carb diet, but mostly made of like processed carbs. And if they could just understand like it doesn't mean that you need to completely eliminate those foods, but just reducing that and focusing more on protein is going to take you a long way. And it doesn't have to be complicated. Like cooking a protein rich food doesn't have to be complicated. You could cook up some eggs. You can just take a chicken breast and put it over the skillet. It doesn't have to be a super gourmet meal. So that's usually the first low hanging fruit I like to teach the people I counsel in order to just kind of get the basics going.
Yeah. I often forget too. Someone close to me, I won't say their name because I don't want them to be embarrassed, but said, was like, what's a macro? And, you know, I just had this wake up moment of like, wow, we say these terms all the time and just think, oh, that's normal. You know, or even the term blood sugar balance, like, okay, we hear that all the time. But what does that really mean? You know, so I think part of it too is the education, having someone like you that's educating people and helping break down that terminology where it's like, okay, macro is just protein, fat, and carb. And what is a protein, fat, and a carb? And not everybody realizes too that there's differences within, you know, a carb is not a carb. There's so many different types and they react differently in your body. So I think the education piece is really important. I'm curious.
Why don't we pause? Oh, sorry. Well, I was going to say pause and answer that question. what is blood sugar balance? What, you know, what does that mean?
Yeah. So blood sugar is, so we think of glucose in the blood as our primary source of fuel. And if we think about our metabolism too, I knew I just kind of threw out that word earlier on, but metabolism simply means our ability to process energy. You could think of metabolism like the engine of our body, and our metabolism likes to keep glucose, our primary source of fuel, in a very tight range. And so when there's issues with our metabolism that happen through time, you know, when we gain weight, if we don't eat the right kinds of foods, if we're highly stressed, if we're having poor sleep, all of these factors can negatively impact that metabolism, negatively impact that engine. And once that metabolism starts to dysfunction, our glucose, that primary source of fuel in the blood, will be dysregulated. We'll start to see a higher absolute value of glucose in the bloodstream. We'll also see larger swings and spikes in glucose. So this is problematic because the more that we have our glucose elevated high, spiking high, the more we're going to increase our risk of these lifestyle related conditions down the line. And on top of that, not only do we have to worry about the long-term consequences of dysregulated glucose, but even just having dysregulated glucose can affect us in the, you know, short term as well. When we're glucose is going up and down all day long, we're going to not feel as good. Our energy is going to be low. We're going to be more fatigued, have cravings. So by being able to track your glucose continuously, you can kind of see where you are better on the scale towards developing these lifestyle related conditions and make some tweaks and reduce your chance of this from happening. And in addition, also feel better in the short term. So it's a win-win. And blood glucose, it's important to know too, that we always have like a baseline glucose in the blood. We're never going to go down to zero. We don't want glucose to be at zero in our blood. That would mean that we would have diabetes, type 1 diabetes. So it's blood glucose is not all bad, right? It's just that when it gets too high, it becomes problematic. And it gets high when we consume, so it raises up when we consume foods that contain carbohydrates, which is a macronutrient, and foods that are rich in carbohydrates are grains, fruits, pasta, bread, all those foods. When you consume them, they all break down into glucose in the bloodstream and rise it up.
Yeah. So let's go deeper into that. But before we do, just to back up a little bit, for those who don't know, what exactly is NutriSense and how does a continuous glucose monitor or a CGM work?
Yes. So great question. NutriSense is a health company that utilizes technology and expertise to help you reach your health goals. And when I say health goals, I really mean whatever your health goals are, whether that be long-term health goals, as in reducing your risk of these lifestyle-related conditions, or more short-term, such as improving energy, reducing fatigue, reducing cravings. So the technology that we use to help support you with these goals is CGM technology, and the expertise is through dietitian support. When you sign up for NutriSense, you get complimentary dietitian support for a month. So the dietitian can guide you through interpreting your data and helping you reach your goals. But a CGM, to explain a little bit further what that actually is, it stands for continuous glucose monitor. And it does exactly that. It tracks your glucose continuously for 24/7. And so a CGM is just a small medical device. It's about the size of 3/4 stacked up on each other. And the CGMs that we provide at NutriSense are approved to be put on the back of your arm, like right here. So how you apply it is, yep, there you go.
I have mine on.
Yes, yes. Awesome. So yeah, how you apply is you just take the sensor, push on the applicator, and then push on the back of your arm. And as I'm sure, Jess, you could know, it's painless.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt at all.
I hate needles, and I was getting worked up before I put it in. I was like, I don't believe them that you don't feel anything, but you literally just, you don't feel a thing. It's just like a little snap.
Cool. Yeah. It's painless. And it goes, so basically, when you apply it, there's a little microfilament that just goes beneath the surface of the skin into the interstitial fluid. So it doesn't actually go into your blood glucose. It's the interstitial fluid, which is the fluid surrounding your blood glucose. And when you turn on our app and you scan the CGM with your phone, all the data gets transferred into our app, and you could see how your glucose moves throughout the day. So you may think, well, why is this important to track my glucose all the time? I go to the doctor, my fasting's fine, my A1C is fine. But the problem with, I mean, fasting and A1C are very important to track, and I encourage everyone to get that done annually. It's super important. But these labs are just a snapshot in time. They're not showing us how our glucose is moving throughout the day. And as I noted earlier, why this is important to see how your glucose moves throughout the day is because this tells us a lot about our metabolism, how well that engine is functioning. So if we're seeing these large swings and large response to food, that's a sign that we're not able to tolerate the foods that we're consuming very well. And by making little tweaks early on in our diet and lifestyle, we could reduce the risk of, again, fasting glucose and A1C rising down the line. And also, as noted before, by mitigating these spikes, we can just feel better overall. So really, a CGM, it's not just for diabetics. Anyone could benefit from looking at their glucose and making tweaks, mitigating spikes.
Yeah. Can you go into, because I think there's a range of what's quote unquote normal. I mean, this applies for pretty much all lab testing. And then there's an optimal range. And so when it comes to blood glucose levels, what is an ideal range for like a fasting glucose when you wake up in the morning? And then what do we want to see throughout the day? Because I know, you know, when we eat a meal, obviously our glucose rises, but then we want to have a good recovery afterwards where it's not just spiking, you know, for 2 hours afterwards. So how can you break that down for someone to understand, you know, what levels we're looking for and the importance of, you know, a stable recovery after meals?
Yes, great question. So when you use our program, you'll notice that we're tracking a lot of different metrics. The one of them that we're looking for, one of the main ones, is our fasting glucose, which I'm sure you guys are all familiar with. That's what you get when you go to the doctor. And at the doctor, they're really just looking for a fasting glucose under 100 milligrams per deciliter. But at NutriSense, we're actually looking for a little bit of a looking at it for a little bit lower. We're looking optimally between 70 and 90 milligrams per deciliter, because there's a lot of research to indicate that after 90, you're increasing your risk of, again, these lifestyle related conditions from occurring down the line. So we want to be keeping it, our fasting glucose, between 70 and 90 milligrams per deciliter on most days. And you'll notice with the use of the CGM too, that this could really fluctuate a lot from day to day, dependent on what you had the night before, how well your stress and your sleep is. All of these factors can impact your fasting glucose. So you'll get a better sense of like, okay, what habits am I doing on the day to day that are driving up my fasting glucose, and which ones are actually keeping it in this more optimal range. In addition to fasting glucose, we're also looking at max postprandial glucose, which is simply how high your glucose is going after a meal. So postprandial just means after a meal. And we're just looking for under 140 most of the time. It's okay if you go over 140 every once in a while, but if this becomes something that you're doing multiple times a day, again, we're going to start seeing increased risk of issues down the line. And another glucose trend that we're looking for is standard deviation, which represents our swings in glucose. And we are looking for under 20 is a good standard deviation, and under 14 is more optimal. So this is basically like how high, you're swinging up and down with your meals. So if you, your glucose starts at 70 and then you have a meal and you increase up to 120, that's an increase of 50 points. That's a little bit higher than we're looking for. We want to try to keep those increases of up to 30 or lower, because if we're constantly swinging our glucose, we're going to be increasing oxidation, inflammation, and again, increasing our risk of issues from occurring down the line. So those are the three main trends we're looking for.
Okay. Wow. Super comprehensive. I'd love to do this as well. What are the main factors that you see spiking blood glucose levels?
Yes. Great question. So the number one factor that has an impact on spiking glucose levels is food. And obviously the food that drives up glucose the most is carbohydrates. But again, this does not mean that you need to eliminate carbohydrates completely. Carbohydrates are a great source of fuel for the body. They're important. A lot of carb-rich foods are very micronutrient dense. But it's just that if we're consuming a very large quantity at a given time, this could drive up glucose in an unhealthy way. And the more processed the carb is, the higher it's going to go. So generally speaking, a food that's richer in fiber, such as an apple or quinoa or legumes or nuts or seeds, these foods are less likely to drive up our glucose because they have the fiber, which slows down the release of glucose into the bloodstream. And when it comes to food, it's really, everyone has a very different response to different carb-rich foods. It's funny, like putting on my CGM for the first time, I thought that a food like honey would spike my glucose super high, but it actually didn't have much of an impact on me. But then something like a sweet potato, if I eat too much sweet potato, I will see a very large spike. I can eat a moderate amount, but once I go over a certain threshold, it goes too high. So you wouldn't know what foods are driving up your glucose if it weren't for using a CGM, right? So there are some general rules of thumb, again, that the more fiber rich the food is, the more mitigated the spike is, but you know, it's still very individualized. So that's one of the cool things about using our program is that you could see what works best for you. But in addition to food, another factor that has a huge impact on our glucose response is stress. So when we're stressed, we produce the hormone cortisol, which drives up the production of glucose. And this is okay acutely, you know, every once in a while, like we're all going to experience stress, but if we're chronically stressed all the time and we're not managing it well, this could really drive up the absolute value of our glucose and also make our responses to higher carb foods worse. So managing stress is very important in mitigating our glucose spikes. And another factor that's also really important is sleep. When we're sleep deprived, we not only increase the absolute value of our glucose the next day, but we reduce our insulin sensitivity, which means that we are going to have higher glycemic responses to the foods that we normally would have. And again, insulin is just the hormone that we release when we consume a carb-rich food. And insulin is the hormone that takes glucose out of the bloodstream and brings it to our cells. So when we're less sensitive with insulin, we're going to have these larger spikes. So making sure that your, you know, carb tolerance is in the range that works for you, stress management and sleep management, all of these factors will play a role in how you respond to how your glucose responds throughout the day.
Yeah, I love that breakdown. So helpful. And I actually wanted to share, just because I had worn the device for 2 weeks prior to the one I just put on, just a little bit of the observations that I found when it came to different foods, because I think it might be helpful for people. I was actually really proud of myself because my glucose levels stay really stable throughout most of the day. And I never had a spike over 140, except for once. And it was a sushi dinner. And it made a lot of sense. It was just a lot of white rice right before bed.
and, you know, it was a bunch of rolls. And then there was also edamame. And I looked at that meal and technically it had, because we always recommend, you know, our clients to include protein, fat, and fiber along with your carbs.
Yeah.
And so technically it had all of those elements, but when I dissect it, it's like the majority of it was the white rice. Yeah, there was avocado, but how much avocado is actually in a sushi roll? It's like a tiny amount. And then there was more edamame, which is again, yes, you get protein and fiber, but then you get more carbs. And then there weren't that many veggies. There's a little piece of cucumber here, a little piece of carrot there, which again, you know, so it was just interesting to see that the spike was pretty drastic right before bed, which it can, if you're sensitive to sleep, impact your sleep because you're increasing your glucose levels right before sleep, which raises your cortisol. And then you might wake up in the middle of the night feeling wide awake or having a craving. And then that has a ripple effect on the rest of your day. So for me, it was kind of interesting to see, but also I felt zero guilt because I loved that meal and it was sushi Sunday and there was no, you know, beating myself up for it or being like, oh, next time I won't do that. No, I will do it the exact same way. I just am not having sushi all the time. And it's interesting to see, okay, if you did, if you were someone who had sushi all the time or a meal like that, maybe it's about experimenting with having some part of it being sashimi, doing a little bit less rice, adding in some more vegetables, and then kind of comparing. And so I'm interested to know your thoughts on food combining, because I do find that it's not just about, oh, I had too many carbs. It's about maybe what you paired it with and also potentially the order at which you ate the foods.
Yes. And I love that that's something that you talk about with the clients that you work with, because that's something that we talk about with our members as well, is the importance of always pairing carbs with a protein and fat. Because if it's just going to be pure carbs, the likelihood of your glucose driving up a little bit too high is going to be much higher. And not only is pairing your carbs with protein and fat can help mitigate the spike, but also, as you noted, the sequencing of those macronutrients can really help. So you could still have the same meal, but just sequencing the macronutrients a bit will have a huge impact on mitigating the spike. So if you have a little bit of protein and fiber before diving into the carbs, we're going to see a lot better of a response. So, you know, so for something like sushi, for example, what I would maybe recommend to someone if they were consuming maybe the meal that a similar meal to what you had and had a large spike, like twice a day or something, then we'd want to maybe change it up a bit. And what we could do is we could, you know, maybe reduce, make sure that before we have the sushi, having some leafy greens, some fiber from non-starchy vegetables, maybe a little bit of protein, whether that be like lean chicken, shrimp, fish. All those foods are rich in protein and high in fiber. And if we just let that digest for like 5 minutes and then dive into the sushi, we're going to have a much better response.
Okay. So do you ever suggest specific amounts of each macro?
So when it comes to macronutrient recommendations, it's very context dependent on what the person's goals are, how much they weigh, what their history is, et cetera. There's not like a set thing for everyone, but generally speaking, I like to recommend about 1 gram per pound of ideal body weight of protein. So generally around like 100 grams of protein is a good target for most people. Obviously, if that's too much, we can go a little bit lower. But I find that around that much per day helps people keep their glucose spikes more mitigated and also just helps support satiety, feeling good. So generally speaking, if we're having like, you know, 3 meals a day, that might be like 33 grams of protein. And then when it comes to carbs and fat, that ratio is really context dependent on, again, what makes the person feel the best and what keeps their glucose spikes in line. So usually it's not going to be a diet where it's like super high carb and low fat. Because I generally see that those are going to cause like larger swings in glucose. but like a little bit of like a 50-50 ratio generally works for people. But again, it's really context dependent. If someone has a lot more muscle mass on them, a little bit moves a lot more throughout the day, they're going to be able to tolerate a very high amount of carbohydrates.
Okay.
Yeah. And can you touch on, cause we actually touched on this with Austin, but I would love your input on it. So you touched on insulin resistance and the importance of, you know, keeping blood sugar levels stable to support insulin sensitivity, which is what we want. What are some things that someone can do, let's say after a high carb meal or going into a meal that they know, like my sushi dinner, I'm not going to modify the shit out of that. I love that dinner. It's not happening. But like, what are some things that I could do or the average person could do going into, maybe they're going to tacos and margarita night and they want it and they're at peace with it and it's great, to improve that insulin sensitivity when it comes to maybe habits leading up to that meal and then some things that they could do afterwards?
Yes. Great question. And just, I like that you also noted that that's something that's important to you and that you want to keep into your routine. And by having maybe a larger spike once a week, like that's going to be fine. If everything else is good and in line, I would not be worried about it. And that's something that I do actually experience with a lot of people on a more regular basis than I would like, is that sometimes people get a little too obsessive about controlling their glucose. And then that creates a whole host of other problems. Like health is more than just controlling glucose. Like it's much more holistic than that, which I'm sure you guys definitely understand from what I heard through your podcast, that that's super important as well. But yeah, there's a lot that we can do in order to improve our responses to higher carb foods. One of the most effective ways that we can improve our response is timing a higher carb meal after a workout. So after any kind of workout, whether that be aerobic, strength training, we're going to see an increase in our insulin sensitivity. So we're going to be able to tolerate those carbs a lot better. So I usually time my higher carb meals like an hour or so after my workout, and I'm not going to have like a large glycemic response. In addition to timing after a workout, timing your higher carbs more so earlier in the day, in the afternoon, we're going to see a better response because we operate on a circadian clock. And throughout the day, we actually see a decrease in our insulin sensitivity. So it's probably not best to eat a large quantity of carbs very late at night because we're just not going to tolerate it as well because our insulin sensitivity has decreased. So yes, timing earlier in the day is super helpful. In addition, we could have about 1 to 2 tablespoons of apple cider vinegar about 30 minutes before a meal. This has been shown to slow down the release of glucose into the bloodstream and actually increase the muscle's ability to soak up glucose. So that's just like a fun hack you could try. Cool. Yeah, and I thought at first it was just like a silly like thing that people would say, but there is a good amount of research to back that up, that yeah, just 1 to 2 tablespoons before a meal could really be helpful. If you know you're going to have like a very large carb meal, such as like margaritas or something, it could be helpful. And in addition, walking after a meal can be very helpful as well. We like to recommend that 30 minutes after a meal is over is the ideal time to go on that walk. So just between like 15 and 30 minutes, we could see a more mitigated spike of up to 40% by just going on a simple walk. Because when we're walking, we're using that energy, that glucose energy in the body, and it's not going to be stuck in the bloodstream. We're using it for energy.
Yes. And I think too, this is something I've kind of been implementing more recently with strength training, is like on those heavier lift days, doing those on a day where maybe you know that you're going to be going out to like a dinner with drinks, or I've even heard someone say like do a leg day on that because you're using such big muscle groups and burning more, that, you know, do your leg day on the day you know you're going to go out and get tacos and margaritas, which I do think we live in sort of this, a lot of people, including myself in the past, come from this all or nothing mentality. And so it's like, oh, well, Saturday's my cheat day, so I'm not going to work out. I'm going to like order whatever I want, stay out late. And then you're adding in the poor sleep, the stress, the food, the drinks, the not getting in movement. And that's all recipe for completely imbalanced blood sugar. And so I don't think people realize how it all goes together. So if you wake up and you have the intention of, even if it's not a heavy workout, let me go for a really nice hike or a beach walk, do things to soothe my cortisol levels, you know, get me in that rest and digest state before the meal, you know, walk home from the restaurant, whatever you can do, make sure you have a good night's sleep. Then to your point, you know, that spike is going to be mitigated more so than if you were to, you know, let it all go.
Yeah. And again, like you said earlier, it's, you know, we don't want to get so crazy and obsessive about, you know, going out and having a little fun every once in a while, but it's important to know these things. Cause you know, after a meal like that, if you weren't aware of, all the things that we talked about, how stress and sleep and exercise plays a role in our glucose spikes, you may feel really bad the next day and not know why. But if you think about it from a glucose perspective and apply some of these hacks and tips to be able to mitigate your spikes more, you're just going to feel a lot better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm thinking about my upcoming vacation. I leave next week and I have another one to Europe. And, you know, I'm so, I wouldn't say controlled, but I have my habits down when I'm home and I'm healthy and balanced and all these things. But when I'm on vacation, obviously it's like, I really do enjoy living in the moment, having wine every night, having pasta dinners, you know, we're going to be in Europe. But I think about how intense my sleep issues are when I'm traveling, and the fact that I am having wine like right before bed, I am having these carb rich dinners, I'm not, you know, gelato, you know, a lot of the time on top of all that. And so, you know, I'm just thinking about how important these lessons are. And if you have tips for traveling as well, I mean, it's not
that's my a good question.
It's not my average day.
Yeah, that's a good point. There's a lot of different tips that we can apply when we're traveling. I'm constantly talking to members about how they can be better equipped for traveling. And again, very context dependent on what my recommendations would be. But I would say, number one, just make sure you're getting in a lot of movement during the day. And now this doesn't have to mean like you got to find a gym when you're in Europe and do your strength training routine, just like trying to make an effort that we're going to walk a little bit more. So instead of taking a cab, like what about we walk instead? Yeah. And not only is that going to increase our insulin sensitivity, but by just walking, we're going to reduce our stress. And again, by reducing stress too, that's going to also help improve our ability to control these glucose spikes. I would also, again, try to apply some, I mean, you don't have to be crazy about it, but just if you could try to sequence your meals where you have a little bit of fiber before digging into the carbs, that could be really helpful. And again, keeping everything more regulated. Also, what else could you do? Just making sure that you're getting a good amount of sleep, you know, trying not to stay out too late. Because again, if you're not getting in that good sleep, you're going to have, you know, a higher absolute value of glucose the next day. Your responses to these foods is not going to be as ideal. And, you know, just trying to, I feel like just trying to make the most of the experience, try and have fun, not obsess too much. I think that's probably one of the more important things that you can do when you're traveling.
Yeah, it's a tough cycle because I always struggle to sleep. So it's like so much easier said than done because like just the time difference and everything, I'm just like a mess. So that's always a little frightening before I go into it. But I think working on these things and you know, like the apple cider vinegar is a great tip. How much did you say a tablespoon?
Yeah, 1 to 2 tablespoons 30 minutes before can have a really big impact.
That could be something I do. And just shifting meals and like wine earlier into the
day. Oh yeah. And Rye, you know, it's so good. I just posted a recipe for it, but it's taking the Ultima electrolytes and mixing it with apple cider vinegar.
Oh,
like just take the stick pack with apple cider vinegar and it creates like a little mocktail. So you could bring those stick packs with you too, because that's good for energy.
Yeah. Are there any other like supplements or things that you ever suggest? I know the focus is really on food and lifestyle.
Yeah. Yeah. Focus, as you noted, is mostly on food and lifestyle. That's our number one priority, but there are some supplements that have been shown to be helpful. Berberine has been shown to be helpful. That's the one supplement that we've noticed the most, that has the most impact on controlling glucose. Some of our members use cinnamon supplements, but there's less research to back that up. I would, if I could recommend anything, it would be berberine.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I was,
Go ahead.
I was just also wondering, you know, you mentioned earlier, and we've talked about not becoming obsessive, because then it's the cycle. You're becoming obsessive about being perfect with this monitor, and then thus you're increasing your cortisol levels, which are driving up glucose. So you don't want to fall into that cycle. But what should we really be like, assuming your average person, we're here in a kind of, we're all in the health business, but your average person is not having these perfect days all the time. And if they're working on it, it's going to be a bit of a journey. So what really is like a realistic starting goal for, I mean, there's so many meals and snacks within the day and opportunities to have a spike. So what are we aiming for?
So again, context dependent on what the situation is with the person, but I like to, one of the great things about NutriSense is that when you sign up for the program, not only are you getting this valuable data, but you're getting that support of a registered dietitian who will be able to help you understand this better. Because I think a lot of people go in and they act, there's so many times, especially in the beginning when I talk to people, they think a spike is bad and I'll have to talk them off the cliff. Like, no, it's actually not bad. It's okay for your glucose to move. We just don't want it to go over this certain threshold, and you're not, it's not going over that threshold that you think it needs to, it's in a good range. So, you know, it's good to have that dietitian support to help you at least understand your data, like what we're looking for, what's okay and what's not okay. And also for what's important about or good about the dietitian support is that they will help you develop goals and little interventions to help you reach your goals. So we always like to start small. So what's something that you can see yourself doing? So a lot of times, I mean, it changes from person to person, but a lot of times if someone is like completely out of control and doesn't know where to start, I usually like to start with breakfast because that's a meal that is usually pretty consistent each day. And if we can get breakfast sorted out, then that kind of sets the stage for the rest of the day. So maybe trying to focus on, okay, like maybe lunch and dinner, we'll just let that be as it is right now, but let's like focus on finding breakfast foods that work for you and see how that goes for a week or two. And then usually when that person implements that small intervention, they'll feel better. And then once they feel better, they're like, oh, this isn't so bad because I actually like this change has benefited me. And I'm better with this change. So now I'm more open to trying different things. So again, starting really small is very important.
Yeah. And I guess too, it's kind of obvious, like if you're going over the optimal threshold, that is your red, that's your little flag to say, hey, let's change your habits. You don't have to like freak out, but the more that's happening, the more you need to tweak what you're eating and look at things. So,
yeah. And also I just wanted to say, cause within the app, you can write notes, which I think we're such a proponent for tracking your cycle and writing notes about your symptoms when it comes to that. But this is really like that too, where you can type in your meals that you've had. And one thing I really like about it is that it's not like a MyFitnessPal or something where you're putting in exact amounts. You can just write a description. So I just write in, you know, eggs, avocado, toast, like approximate amounts of what I had, but it's not giving you like calories or macros if that's triggering for you, which, you know, for some people that's really helpful, but for some people that's triggering. And so it's not giving you that. So then once you put your meals in, which you don't have to do, but I would recommend doing it, then you can see like where were your levels before that meal, what happened after that meal, and then kind of host different experiments. So you can also put in your movement for the day and kind of see how your blood sugar responded maybe after, maybe you had that sushi dinner for lunch. You moved it up to lunch because you noticed at dinner it was spiking too much. So you had it at lunch instead, and then you decided to go for a walk after. You can host experiments for yourself within the app where it's more of you being that compassionate detective into your own body and just saying, okay, so I'm going to experiment tomorrow with doing that same sushi dinner, but I'm actually going to have it for lunch. And since I didn't go for a walk afterwards, I'm going to do a walk and I'm going to compare my levels from the dinner one to the lunch one with the walk. And it just becomes really interesting. And so I think you're reflecting and you're seeing what works for you versus coming at it with judgment and shame. I don't think it's about this lack mentality of, oh, I have to take away, I have to remove all these different things. More so, like we were talking about before, what can you maybe add in to slow the spike? What other lifestyle factors, you know, can you support yourself with versus always, you know, telling people to take things away? Because I think that's what people are the most fatigued by. And that's why lifestyle change is so hard, because we're constantly being told that we have to restrict things. Whereas this is actually figuring out what works for your unique body and what little tweaks you can make so that you can still enjoy that food that you love.
Yeah.
Have it work for you.
Yes. I love that you noted that. And that's something all of us dietitians really value, is that no food should be completely eliminated from your diet. I mean, obviously if you have some sort of allergic response to it or whatever, then yes, we might need to take that out, but all foods really can fit, and just a few little tweaks in like either the amount of it or the sequencing of the food or when you have it will work best for you and will just make you feel better. And there's no need to completely take out any sort of food or nutrient.
Yeah. What are some other experiments? Because I actually have been working with a dietitian through NutriSense, and we've done some experiments together, like breaking up, taking some of the protein in some of my main meals and dialing that back a little bit and having it more in the plate, like some of it in the place of snacks. But I'm not having so much protein at one sitting, just kind of playing around with that to see if my energy levels improve doing that. Playing around with adding in more, for example, vitamin C rich foods, stuff like that, and just other experiments that we'll do when it comes to the placement of meals and, you know, the combination. So how do you work with clients on those experiments? Because I think that's one of the coolest features, is that support and then also that those experiments that you can conduct.
Yeah, there's so many different experiments that we could try. We talked about a few before with just like meal sequencing, meal timing. Could also try like different fasting routines. I find a lot of people who come into the program, if they do fasting, they might like break their fast in the afternoon and then stop eating really late at night. And that could actually, you know, as we noted before, when you're eating really late at night, that could drive up your glucose overnight and make it more difficult to sleep. So maybe just experimenting with actually starting that fasting window, like breaking your fast a little bit earlier in the day, like front loading your calories earlier in the day and closing out later, could really be helpful in reducing your average glucose and, again, improving your energy. Other experiments that could be helpful is, you know, doing a little bit of breath work before eating a meal and seeing if by lowering your stress, you see an improvement in your response. Could also even experiment with, I mean, this would be for someone who's maybe a little bit more biohacky, but like doing cold therapy, because that and sauna work, all of those have been shown to be potentially helpful in improving glucose regulation by incorporating that into your routine. And again, like as noted before, you know, timing your higher carb meals after an exercise, and seeing, or not after exercise, and seeing like if there's a really large difference in how you respond to the food.
Yeah. Do you ever do experiments around the menstrual cycle and, you know, how certain foods maybe play into different phases?
Yeah. And I know that's something that you guys talk about a lot on your podcast. There is our hormones with our cycle actually does play a role in our glucose regulation. It's weeks 3 and 4 leading up to your period. We actually see usually a decrease in insulin sensitivity. And that we think is related to an increase in progesterone that like reduces insulin sensitivity. So right before the period, we might notice that with the same foods that you normally respond well to, we might see a higher glycemic response. So we could definitely experiment with that, like seeing whether or not the same food that you'd have like earlier in their cycle has, you have the same response like during that weeks 3 and 4.
What are your thoughts on, in general, the idea of intermittent fasting? I know you said in the example of someone starting later and then eating later, that can be problematic. But what about just like, for example, when I was trying to do intermittent fasting, I would eat by 12 and I was starving and so moody by that time. Didn't seem to work well for me. So what do you see with those that, you know, can that impact? And then also having just coffee, you know, not having a meal, starting your day with just coffee, like how does that impact our blood sugar levels?
Yeah. So again, context dependent, I was the same as you. I used to experiment with fasting and I'd break it, my fast at 12 PM and I'd eat from 12 PM to 6 PM. And I was just starving. I actually ended up gaining weight because no longer is like binging on food. So it's, I think some people like to, you know, you hear in the nutrition world, oh, this is the end all be all. You need to do fasting in order to maintain your weight and regulate your weight. But it's not always the case. Like, I mean, for some people it works and for some people it doesn't work. So we really want to do what works for the person. And there are other people that I talk to who really enjoy fasting until the afternoon. And that's something that works for them. It's easier to just have those two meals a day. So, you know, whatever, you know, you have to work with the specific person, what their preferences are and what their goals are. But yeah, generally speaking, like a fast of like 14 hours a day works for most people and keeping their glucose regulated. But again, this is just a general rule of thumb. Like you could certainly like go, you know, have that window be shorter or longer and be totally fine. I do find though, sometimes, especially with women, if we fast for 20 to 24 hours, usually I don't see a good response with that, especially with people with women who already have a lot of other, like a lot of stress going on in their lives. They're already doing a lot of exercise because again, if we have just that one meal a day, sometimes on top of like everything else going on, that could actually increase stress in our body. And again, as we noted earlier, by increasing that stress, we could actually increase glucose production and increase the absolute value of our glucose. So yeah, a lot of times I don't see that working for women, but again, there are some case scenarios where it does work. So that's the beauty of having the CGM. You could see what works for you.
Well, yeah, I'm curious about the coffee thing because you know, coffee can spike your cortisol as well. So if you're just having that and not balancing it with protein, with fiber, seems like that could be a real spike for your blood sugar. But again, obviously having this monitor would allow you to check for yourself. But those that I actually don't know the cost of this monitor. I'm very curious, but for those that might not be able to afford this, what are some physical manifestations of high blood sugar? Some signs that you're having a spike?
There are a lot of signs that you could tell without having a monitor that you're having a large spike and a dip in your glucose. Like if you notice like 2 to 3 hours after a meal, you see this, you feel this dip in energy, you feel tired, you feel fatigued. There's a likelihood that you had a very large spike and a dip in your glucose below your pre-meal values. And that dip lower than pre-meal values can make you feel fatigued because your glucose is at a lower baseline than it likes to be. So your body isn't operating as well as it should. So you're craving glucose again, you're craving carbs again. So that is the number one sign that you're probably having some dysregulation with glucose. Also, if you're shaky or dizzy, that's another sign that your glucose is a little too low. And again, that could happen in response to a higher carb meal because it goes up too high and then it goes down lower than it should.
Okay. Yeah. And I also, one other little thing I wanted to squeeze in there that I think to your point, we get like on our black and white, you know, it's intermittent fasting or it's, you know, another extreme. And so one of the things that I have had a lot of clients come to me fearful of is snacking. And that was something I was afraid of forever too. And Ryan and I have talked about this before with certain experts who are like, no, to stabilize your blood sugar levels, you need to be waiting 4 to 6 hours between meals. But that doesn't work for everyone. And that certainly doesn't work for me. And I still keep my blood sugar levels very stable having snacks throughout the day. So can you kind of just demystify that for our listeners?
Yeah, you're definitely right. There's no right or wrong way for meal frequency. You know, some people do great on one meal a day and some people do better on like 5 to 8 meals a day. As long as your glucose is in the range that we're looking for, all the ranges that I noted before, as long as your postprandial spikes are under 140, your swings are good, your fasting's good, there's no reason to change what you're doing. I mean, as I noted before, I didn't have a CGM on before when I did 2 meals a day, but I'm sure like, for me, that was probably terrible for my glucose, probably eating too much. And then my glucose was going too low. And yeah, I find like increased frequency works for a lot of people. I'm actually talking to a vegan member now who, you know, her diet is generally higher in carbs. So if she eats too much at once, she's got these large swings. So for her, it actually just works better to have like 5 smaller meals in a day for keeping her glucose in range. So there's really no right or wrong way to do it, as long as your main glucose trends are in the ranges that we're looking for.
Yeah. And one little hack that we always give too, that I love testing it within the app. I have these superfood latte blends that are sugar-free, with superfoods. And I usually recommend for clients who wake up in the morning and they're not exactly hungry right away, but they don't want to do an intermittent fast, to do, you know, one of my superfood latte blends. Or if you don't have my superfood latte blends, you could also do like, maybe you do want to experiment with a little coffee or a half calf or something, but add that to a scoop of protein powder, make yourself like a mocha with like a chocolate protein powder, and maybe some cinnamon for blood sugar balance, and see how you do on that. For me, it works really well. Oh, and add, you know, a good amount of almond milk or coconut milk to it. So then you got those fats, you got that protein, along with your coffee or along with your chai or whatever you're sipping on. I find that that's worked really well for me in the mornings, just to give me, you know, about an hour and a half or so until I actually am ready for breakfast. So I don't think it necessarily has to be like a full meal. But you know, something that can keep them stabilized and also, you know, makes you feel good.
Yeah. And again, through the CGM, you're able to see that that works great for you.
Yeah.
And also great how you incorporate protein with that, because another thing to note is sometimes when we have carbs in the fasted state, as like the first meal that we break with our fast with just pure carbs, we're going to usually have a larger swing. So breaking it with making sure there's protein and fat with it, with that first meal that you have is really important for keeping your glucose in line.
Yeah.
Well, I have a final question, which just tell me if you talk to Austin about this, but I am so curious about alcohol's impact on the body, because we know wine has a little bit of sugar, but it's actually not a crazy amount of sugar. And then like vodka doesn't have any sugar, right? Technically. Yeah. So then why does it cause this spike?
Yeah. So people's response to different alcoholic beverages varies, but generally speaking, we don't see much of a glucose response with alcoholic drinks like wine, especially drier wines and liquor, because they're actually lower in carbs. I don't think wine has that much unless it's like a more sweetened wine. But again, context dependent, really depends on, you know, what kind of wine you're having and what your situation is. But generally speaking, yeah, we don't see a response with those two. With beer, it could be a little bit higher. And with sugary cocktails, it could be a little bit higher because again, those contain more carbohydrates. But with all alcohol, we do find that if you're, you know, consuming a lot of alcohol in addition to food, like especially later at night, we might see a higher fasting glucose the next day. And this doesn't always happen, but it's something, a general trend I find is because when you're consuming alcohol with food, your body breaks down the alcohol first, and then the glucose remains high in your bloodstream. And so it takes longer for your body to process it through. So sometimes we'll see a higher fasting glucose the next day.
Yeah. So if you change the order around at all, like, you know, because sometimes, especially on vacation, for example, we'll kind of won't have had a huge lunch or something, and I'll have wine, and then I'm kind of tipsy faster, which sometimes I like because then I don't need as much.
Really?
Yeah. It's like, oh, okay. And now I'm like a cheap junk. But you know, is it better to switch the order and have the, you know, protein heavy with fiber first? Does that have a better impact, or is it all pretty much the same the way the body breaks it down?
Yeah, I think, well, having fiber and protein before an alcoholic drink that might cause a larger spike. So if you're, if the alcoholic drink that you're consuming is high in carbs, then it might be better to have protein and fiber before. But if the alcoholic drink you're drinking, which is like a drier wine, it's, and you respond fine to it, it's not really going to make probably that big of a difference if you have protein or fiber before.
Okay. Super important to think about that type of drink, because people are so used to ordering drinks that have these mixers and juices, and you can be, you can change all of that by just getting, like, sometimes I bring stevia packets on vacation and I just put that in with my soda water and it's a great drink. And like, I'll have a good cocktail here and there, but for the most part, like if you're having multiple drinks, that's a better.
Oh yeah, sure.
I know. I always just ask for, I mean, I only drink rosé. Such a basic bitch, but I ask for organic, or if they don't have organic, that's fine. I'm not that bougie. I'll just ask for a dry rosé. Yes, and usually I ask for a dry French rosé, which is a little bit bougie, but that's because it truly is my favorite. It tastes the best. And typically French rosés are dry and they typically are organic. They just can't say it on the menu because it's a different process over there. But yeah, typically like a French rosé is going to be on the drier side and also tastes really good. So I usually just ask for that versus like a Moscato, which to me is disgusting. But some people love those like really sweet
dessert wines.
Yeah. Or even like a, some Pinot Grigios are really sweet and then other ones are really dry. So yeah, I think just
sweetness is a good indicator.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is that right? Am I right with that? That sweetness can be a good indicator?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Okay.
Well, we're coming over the time that we allotted for you. So I am just so excited to know more about all of this because I've had an understanding, but on more of a basic level, I would say. So this has been super helpful for me. Jess, did you have any final questions?
Well, I just wanted to say thank you to you guys for giving me the opportunity to try out the device for a month. And I also wanted to give a shout out to my dietitian, Heather, because she's been really helpful. I've shared a lot with my backstory of suffering from migraines and having a resurgence more lately. And I had no idea that you guys could help with that kind of thing. I actually, she had sent me a message about my levels, kind of breaking them down for me to understand a little bit more. And I said, hey, I'm having a really bad migraine right now. I'm going to have to write you back in a couple of days. And she said, well, actually, I can help you with that. Like, I've worked with a lot of clients that have had migraines, and there's some experiments that we can do together. And so we've actually been working primarily on that and doing like a supplement detox and then reintroduction just to see if my tolerance to certain supplements is maybe not optimal, because you can test your micronutrient levels and they could come back completely normal, but you have an intolerance to something. Even if you're in range for something, doesn't mean that you're tolerant to it. So I thought that was super helpful. It's not something that I've done before. And the reintroduction of the supplements is actually kind of complicated to do on my own. So she's helping me with that. And we're doing it around my cycle, which is when certain times of my cycle is potentially when I'll get them. So we're aligning it with that. So that has been so helpful. So I just want people to know that, you know, it's just, it's beyond just understanding, you know, what do the numbers mean? There's so many different ways that the dietitians can support. I know that you specialize in weight loss and healthy meals. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's so great that you had such a good, Heather's the best.
She's so, so smart.
Yeah. And that's the cool thing about NutriSense too. It's like, as you noted, it's not just about a dietitian helping you understand your glucose levels. It's seriously like whatever your goals are, health goals are, we could help you achieve that. And all the dietitians at NutriSense are, I mean, I'm biased, but I really think they're some of the best, and they all come from different fields, some from intuitive eating, some from functional health, some from sports nutrition. And we share that knowledge with each other. So we all are becoming more well-rounded, and we could really help with whatever your goals are. So I'm so happy to hear that you were able to figure that out with Heather.
Yeah. And if people want to work with NutriSense and work with you, I mean, there's so many people out there who need support with weight loss and how to cook, you know, simple, delicious meals sustainably. If people want to work with NutriSense and then you, you know, how does that work?
So yeah, if you want to join NutriSense, just search us online, NutriSense.io. You could also find us on Instagram, NutriSense.io, and you know, go on the website and choose the plan that works best for you. And then once you're all signed up, you'll have to fill out a simple goals questionnaire, and then you'll get your CGMs and work specifically with me. You just get assigned a dietitian when you start. So can't like work specifically with me, but okay. Whoever you get will be, I promise, will be awesome.
Amazing. Yeah. And people can use the code JUST30 for $30 off your first subscription. I mean, just go on the website. People can see what's currently available. Use that code. You get a free month with a dietitian, which is awesome. And then Instagram.
Instagram is NutriSense.io.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. This has been amazing. So helpful.
Thank you.
Well, I hope that you got some tangible takeaways from that episode. And then hopefully you'll go back and listen to Austin's episode as well. And now you'll feel super empowered. You'll feel really ready to start to really take a look at your blood sugar levels and how to, you know, monitor it and how to take steps with your food and your lifestyle that will help improve your levels so that you feel really, really good. Cause that's what it's all about, is getting to that 2.0 version of you. And again, if you like this episode, share with us. And we hope that you have a beautiful rest of your week. And remember that even if nothing feels right today, you tuning into this podcast and opening your mind is enough. Change doesn't happen overnight. So be patient and kind with yourself, and good things will come. See you next time.